I'm Mark Purcell, and this is Cincinnati Edition. Thanks for listening this morning. She was one of the most famous, or actually infamous, media personalities of the 20th century, and has never previously been the subject of a full-length nonfiction biography. Richard Lucas has filled that gap now with his book, Axis Sally, The American Voice of Nazi Germany. And Richard is on the phone with me from his home in New York. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning.
Well, I have to begin by asking, why were you prompted to, after all this time, write a biography about Axis Sally?
Well, I had heard her broadcasts on a website, and it was a website devoted to World War II broadcasting. I had heard Tokyo Rose before. I had heard some of the others who had broadcast for the Nazis, Paul Revere, Robert H. Best, and some of the others, but I had never really listened to Axis Sally's full-length broadcast, and I noticed two things about her. One was that she was a rather skilled broadcaster compared to the others. And two, on that same page, posing as Axis Sally, were two distinctly different voices. And I said, you know, I knew that Tokyo Rose, there were several of them. They weren't all Iva Taguri. There were other women who had said they were Little Orphan Anne or were known as Tokyo Rose. But I did not know that there were two Axis Sallys. So I started to look into it. I started to look for biographies, look for books, even books as far back as the 60s and the 50s that might tell me something about her and her life and how this woman got from Ohio to Germany and into a reputation of infamy. And I found none. I found a lot of speculation. I found some things that were just flat untrue. And it prompted me to write a fully documented nonfiction book about this woman who otherwise hadn't been covered in the World War II canon of literature, which is extensive.
Well, take a moment just to set a scene for what Axis Sally and Tokyo Rose did and what they were to World War II, because many folks may have forgotten about these shortwave radio broadcasts.
Yes, they broadcast two sets of programs. Basically, they would broadcast to the troops on the front line. They would broadcast shows specifically to those GIs. And they would also broadcast shortwave broadcasts to the eastern and western United States in order to cut the morale of the folks at home, Axis Sally especially. Was a person who would talk to the women of America and say, why are we giving our blood for the British? Why are we giving our blood for Roosevelt? And she would aim her broadcast toward both the GI on the front and women abroad. Tokyo Rose was more towards the frontline soldier, and she always had a tongue-in-cheek style, where she was talking about just playing records for them and teasing them. But the Axis Sally broadcasts were more malevolent. They took a tone of, your girlfriend is fooling around with the 4Fs back at home. And although the GIs, by and large, weren't affected by the tone of the broadcast, in fact, they just liked to listen to the music, she was well listened to. In fact, in 1944, there was a Saturday Evening Post article written by a soldier, and it was called, There's No Gal Like Our Sal.
Well, you mentioned there are two Axis Sallys, Rita Zucca, who
yes.
was the Rome Axis Sally, but your book is focused on Mildred Gillers, who was raised here in Ohio. And as a matter of fact, after the war and her trial came full circle and ended up back here in Ohio, in Columbus, Ohio. But talk about Mildred and what you discovered about her life and her personality and why she was such a good propagandist, but denied being a propagandist.
She was born in Portland, Maine, but her father was a dentist who went from town to town, and he basically followed the railroad and ended up in Ohio. She went to Ohio Wesleyan, and in her senior year, She wanted to become an actress. So with $20 in her pocket and against her mother's wishes, she went to Cleveland and spent a year training to be an actress. Then she went on to Broadway for looking for a fame that she never found. She was largely unsuccessful, and then the Great Depression struck. And she decided to start looking abroad for better opportunities. And what ended up happening was she went to Algiers following a man. She was already in her 30s at that point. She was involved with a young Jewish man who was a British Foreign Service officer and an intelligence agent. That relationship cooled, and immediately after that, she met her mother on a tour in Europe and decided to stay in Berlin in 1934. She saw opportunities to translate, to join the German resurgence. At that point, the Nazis weren't as... it was just the beginning of the Nazi regime. And all of the repression that later came had not been passed. The Nuremberg Laws, etc., and I've been passed yet. She decided to stay, study music, and pursue a new career in Germany. She remained there, became engaged to a man in 1930, around 1939, who was a German citizen. And when the war broke out, the United States wanted all American nationals to come back. Well, he told her that if she returned to the United States, he would not marry her. So she stayed, she got a job at the radio station, stayed long after Pearl Harbor, and at the time Pearl Harbor happened, she was basically stuck. There was no going back. And in addition to that, the man who promised to marry her and told her that he wouldn't marry her if she returned was sent to the Eastern Front, where he was reportedly killed. So that's how she ended up in Germany. And that's how she ended up in this position where she stayed in Germany too long and yet became imbued with Nazi ideology.
And you sound slightly sympathetic to her about being stuck in Germany, but really it was her choice to stay in Germany because she had the career that she couldn't find in the United States. And as you said, she got basically swept up into the Nazi propaganda, but really seemingly continued to believe it. And while she still thought she was an American and trying to support America, she was mm-hmm. also really pushing the Nazi war machine.
Yeah, that was a gradual process where, you know, when she started to work for the radio, she had started by just spinning records and making announcements. It was later when Max Otto Keuschwitz, a former Hunter College professor who fled back to Germany when war broke out in 1939. He was immediately given a job in the Foreign Office. He became her manager and pushed her farther and farther in the direction of making anti-American, anti-Roosevelt, anti-British propaganda. She fell in love with him. He was married, had three daughters, and another on the way. And she was 40 years old, and I think she saw her future with this man for some twisted reason. And she really believed that she was only giving the opinion of a American who did not believe, who believed in isolationism, who believed in basically what was the predominant ideology of the day when she left in 1934, which was that America has no business in the wars of Europe. And she believed that Roosevelt and the British, she was an Irish of Irish extraction, had a deep distrust of the British, and were leading the United States into a conflagration that would cost them many lives. She never believed in her heart that her intent was to betray the nation, and she kept to this until her dying day, that was never her intent, because one of the interesting things about the treason statute, about the treason being the only crime specified in the Constitution, is that you have to be able to prove that it was intentional, that it wasn't under coercion. And when I say that she was stuck in Germany, if she wanted to get out, if she wanted to stop broadcasting, if she wanted to withdraw from the position that she was in, she couldn't. She would have been probably sent to a concentration camp. But I believe, and the evidence shows, that she played along very well with the prevailing Nazi ideology of the day. And in fact, after the war, she would come out and say really ridiculous things like the Cold War proves that Hitler was right in his policies.
Well, I have to say, as I read it, I began to dislike Maxis Sally just as much as I'm sure all those soldiers and government officials did in the time. Did you have a struggle in trying to have a sympathetic approach, but also stating the facts? I mean, it really, you know, reading this, I'm just shocked that this woman continued the way she did.
You know, it was a tightrope walking between sympathy for one human being who turned her life into a miserable situation, basically, through vanity, through making wrong choices. And the same thing is, this is a war and an ideology that costs millions of lives. And I try to keep the judgment out of it. I think her words speak for her, for itself.
Well, thank you for sharing the story, too. I greatly appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much.
Richard Lucas, the author of Axis Sally, The American Voice of Nazi Germany. It's a full-length nonfiction biography of Mildred Gillers, who grew up in Ohio and went to Nazi Germany, was a propagandist on the air known as Axis Sally during World War II, came back to the U.S., was tried, went to prison, and eventually, after being released from prison, ended up at a convent in Columbus, Ohio. You can read her story in the Axis Sally book by Richard Lucas. You'll find a link to it on our website, wvxu.org.